Hi, and welcome back to Not Quite Hollywood Podcast. We hope you enjoyed our previous episode where we talked about Hell or High Water, Dead Man, and Paprika. I'm August.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
John.
So today, we are here to talk about our topics. I thought I was going to do it on Satoshi Kon, but as we talked about Paprika, I kind of... I said a lot that I needed to say, I
You've
guess.
You've exhausted your cone.
I exhausted my
cone. Conography.
I am a Satoshi'd out.
Damn, nice.
So...
Can I start?
I am letting Jamie start.
Thank you. You get to dictate who you want to start. Okay.
I thought I was hosting this one, but...
You are. Sorry.
Jamie.
Whoa.
Can I have the reins back? Go
for it.
Jamie, why don't you tell us what your topic is?
Thank you, August. You're such a gracious dictator.
Shut the fuck up.
I wanted to talk about a technical topic because when I first heard of this movie, and I'll get to it, what it is in a second, and I was like, oh, it seems all right. And then I heard this film is a higher frame rate. Now, growing up, you know, very early, well, I should say earlier in my... a film production career, like, I was making these videos for my projects at NESCOM in 2010, and I'm like, it doesn't look like a movie. It looks different. I can't explain what it is. At that point, I didn't know what it was. And obviously, lighting's a big part of it, quality camera, but the biggest thing was the frame rate. Typical film is 24 frames per second, whereas some video you shoot for whatever project or YouTube, whatever, is either 30 frames per second or 60 frames per second.
Yep.
And there's a whole progressive interlaced 1080p. I'm not going to get into that shit. But so when you see 24 frames per second, is a different feel to it. It's a little softer. It really lends itself well to imaginative filmmaking. It does. You know, you're more easily going to believe a fantasy film if it's in 24 frames versus a 48 frame, for example. And animation started out 15 frames per second, and now it's the same 24. But, you know, obviously a couple of years ago, I've mentioned the fantasy because Peter Jackson decided to do The Hobbit in 48 frames per second, which is double the speed of normal motion in film. So it made all of these special effects, all the makeup, the costume, the hair design, look like a play, a stage play. It didn't look... realistic. The suspension of disbelief was waning. It was really hard to kind of keep in mind. But no, granted, I don't think any of us has seen that version of it, but it makes sense. A lot of the TVs you see are a very similar concept is refresh rate, 120 hertz.
Yeah.
And it looks great for sports or things like that. Video games are cool. But what it does to a film is it makes it look like it's a documentary behind the scenes.
For film. Like, it does look good for, like, animation.
Sure. Oh, animation's great.
Yeah. It looks great. Yeah.
But then there's a film now coming out this fall. Ang Lee has always kind of dipped his toes into different waters. Like, he's done art house films like Brokeback or Crouching Tiger. Really cool, like, a really cool choreography and kind of, like, floaty characters.
The Hulk.
Wuxia.
The Hulk? No, that was
a cool... there's a lot from The Hulk I like.
I like... He was... there's never been a film, I don't think, since that had a comic book design like that. Had, like, panels and everything. It was really cool. He always does different things, anyway. So he did Life of Pi, and that was, at the time, visually stunning CGI. The poor company who did the special effects we've talked about. They've went out and shuttered, but... this movie's called Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. It's based on a true story of a guy who survives this Iraq conflict, and... the whole movie takes place during the halftime walk. Like, they're honoring the troops. They walk across the stadium. And during the walk, he's having flashbacks of his time in the war. They're shooting it at 120 frames per second. That's five times the speed of normal film. It's fucking weird.
How do you even watch that, though? How are they going to display it?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you'd have to have theaters. I'm sure there's some out there that have retrofitted for, like, The Hobbit. But
yeah,
you have to have a projection that makes sense. Like YouTube only, a couple years ago came out 60 frames per second.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you could tell the difference. Like, it's a faster speed, it's more crisp, you don't see as much blur. So in this film, I guess it makes sense. At first I was really taken aback, but with sports and war, I guess it's really cool because it makes you feel like you're right there with them, even the more intimate moments, like you're like during a battle, like this guy's crying or whatever, you're right there. Because I always picture, like, you know, when 120 hertz TVs, when you see that, it looks like you're behind the scenes. It looks like you could put your head through the TV and it's a window. Yeah. And you're just looking out. It doesn't feel right.
And definitely when you have special effects.
Yeah.
It makes it look like dog shit.
So I guess that's why I'm not as mad with this film, because it's not special effects heavy. It's, you know, practical war effects, football, like fucking whatever they have, ticker tape or confetti shit raining down. And like, I guess that's okay. But I like to see it in 120 frames just to see why. But I don't want it to be a trend.
Yeah.
Because I love 24 frames per second. Sure, it was what we could do at the time when film started coming out, but it has this certain feel to it. Like I was trying to explain earlier with my projects, I couldn't get it to look right. And there's a big difference, and most people wouldn't know what it is. Like most people, when they have 120 hertz TVs, like, it looks different, but I can't put my finger on it, like, because it automatically is turned on now on these stupid TVs.
I would like to add that the Halftime Walk looks like a stupid ass movie.
It looks like a really weird idea for a movie, but it's an experimental idea, and I just hope it doesn't become a trend, because James Cameron, that little bastard, was like, I like this idea. I think we should make our films like this. Like, dude, you and your technology boner need to go back in the Avatar's underwater world and get the fuck out.
I hated everything with 3D.
Yeah.
I can't watch 3D movies. If I'm going to the theater and I have the choice, it's always going to be I'm going to take 2D high definition over 3D. And I will not watch it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll wait till it comes out.
The last one that I watched in 3D was an accident.
Which one?
That was the Warcraft.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I had seen two films in 3D recently. I haven't seen it for like 3 years. I'm like, oh, shit. I forgot about 3D, and it sucked. It still fucking sucks. The only ones I can deal with is very similar to frame rate being higher is animation, especially like stop motion, because it looks more real. Like Coraline in 3D was really cool because it was shot with a 3D camera and it was realistic. It wasn't like...
I could see... Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'd want to see something like that in 3D. Not with real people, though. Right. Or...
Because with Coraline, it looks like I had a little diorama in front of me and I was just watching them play out. That was kind of cool.
With the 24 frames per second, the 120... I don't know. I like the 24 frames per second. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just been such a standard. I guess I'm a conservative in that way. But it's just been the standard. Like, I like that choppiness, that blurriness that comes with it. I mean, with a lot of video games, what do they add in? Blur.
Yeah, they have to add blur.
Yeah, to give it kind of like that filmic look to it. Get so worried about the technicalities of it, you can kind of lose, like, the creativeness of the film. This Halftime Walk and being like, are they, like, throwing it in the forefront? Like, it's shot in 120 frames per second.
Not necessarily. I saw the trailer and it looked different, but I wasn't in the understanding that it was a higher frame rate then.
Oh, okay.
And then I heard it after. I'm like, that's kind of fucked up.
I know the trailer, everything looked like...
That's probably what it was. Like, I thought, I was just like, wow, this is a really clear camera. I can't believe I didn't pick up on it, honestly. I was kind of mad at myself. Because I normally would be like, oh, that's a higher frame rate. Like, when you see a YouTube video and you forget it's 60 frames, like, holy shit. You kind of have a moment of clarity. I haven't seen the trailer since finding out it was 120 frames. I don't know, man.
Don't fuck with it.
Yeah.
Keep everything 24 frames per second. Well, it's just like how the reliance upon digital.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
Digital camera versus film. Film has a higher picture quality than digital. I think now they're starting to catch
up. Close parity, but...
Close with 4K.
Well, I think most film was like around 5K.
Really?
So only now they've really started to permeate the traditional standard of 4K as being close enough.
Now, I would say like reachable by the masses.
Yeah. And that's why a lot of these old films that were shot in film can go to a 4K transfer and look fucking insane.
I got a Eraserhead on a 4K
transfer. Nice.
Blu-ray. I can't buy DVDs now. Like, I had to buy Coffee and Cigarettes on DVD because that's, like, the only way I'm going to get that movie. But one time I liked The Departed, and I was just like, yeah, I want to watch a movie today. So I threw in The Departed, and I was just like, this looks ugly.
Mm-hmm.
All the colors are muddy and shit like that. And I'm just like, man, I watched a lot of movies on DVD. Fell in love with them. And it's weird. Like, once you hit Blu-ray and start watching a lot of Blu-rays, going back, you're just like, man, what the fuck happened?
I mean, at the time, that was the highest quality we had.
Exactly. In my mind, I'm picturing it from later on, those DVDs looked like the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
To my mind. Yeah. Because that was the best that we could have.
Like, I'm old enough to... We had disc players, and they looked like records. And that's what you watched your movies on.
Like Laserdisc?
No. Disc. They're called disc players.
Huh.
And we went from that to VHS.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. And VHS was like, oh, my God, look how amazing... you know.
Holy shit.
And then to DVD, which was mind-blowing, and then Blu-ray.
Well, it's like when we had games, and NES, like, that's so real.
Yeah.
Super
yeah.
Nintendo, yeah. Look how real it'll it looks.
Never look better than this.
Best graphics ever. It's real life.
I'm not as hung up on, like, if I want to watch something on Blu-ray and I want to watch it, it's usually something, it's either an animation or it's an action or it's something that I really want to see the crisp, clear visuals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Certain movies I'm fine with DVD. I'll still buy regular,
mm-hmm.
regular film. Like I bought a few this week where I'm like, it's fine. If I can pay $10 less and get it on DVD, I'll do it. That's just me.
Hmm.
That is just you.
I'm the only one.
You're the only one. I don't know.
And except for, like I said, it has to be. Like, I wasn't going to buy Cowboy Bebop on DVD again or, you know, yeah. other films. You know.
Well, see, that's the thing. With,
like, I wasn't going to get Paprika on DVD. Certainly not.
A lot of the films that, like, I look for is, like, Criterion Collection. And so I'm going to go for those where they have the better restoration or I can get better picture quality so it can best mimic what it looks like on film.
So how do you guys feel about when you watch a documentary that has like a long span of time, like a history to it, and you see, like, you'll see HD interviews and some HD footage of recent shots, and then it cuts to an old archival footage, and you can tell, like, holy shit, it's jarring how grainy it is or whatever it ends up being. Film obviously holds up better than like the early DV stuff, but that's what I'm kind of excited for right now in our world right now. If I could ever shoot something in 4K or 5K. So this is a picture of, and you guys can't see this online, but look up 4K versus 1080p. This is the size difference.
Mm-hmm.
So like 1080p is like a barely a fourth of a 4K resolution. And there's five 8K now. But with this, there's impossibilities because a lot of people have 1080p TV still.
Mm-hmm.
As a filmmaker, you could edit and kind of like get a different composition of a 4K image. You know, no one would ever know the difference unless they had a 4K TV. So if they had a 4K Blu-ray and then they see this shot, it's that shot, one shot's a little grainy, but for everybody else, it's 1080p, they see no difference. Because let's say this image, like, oh, the top right was a little too, there's too much headroom, so maybe I cut it down a bit so I can zoom in a little bit, and it's perfect, still looks great. Because that little box can fit anywhere in this big one.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't know if you guys are getting this at home, but the point is, like, right now we're in this, like, kind of, like, halfway area where it's interesting for a filmmaker to have that flexibility. It's like those light cameras right now they have. You can take, it takes all light in, and you can take different focuses now after the photos already been taken.
Oh, yeah.
Really cool shit. But then once everything's 4K, it's not, you're not going to.
You're right. I want to shoot something 4K.
Let's go.
Well, I mean, I want to do it in a different way. Because I want to take that image, you know, and, like, you know, set it up, like, rule of thirds, you know.
Yep.
Do the scene setup, you know, the scene composition, nice and normal. And then just, like, move it up in the blank space in the left-hand corner. And still, like, have the dialogue going on and stuff. And just, like, switch it to somewhere weird and just...
You'll see a little bit of curly hair in that
too. Oh, yeah, exactly. And, yeah, shoot that and just be, like, you know, have the production company be, like, oh, yeah. Here's the dailies. Here's the footage I got. And they're like, oh, yeah, this is really great. And then you show them the edit, and they're like, what happened to all that footage? And you're like, I used it. It's just fair. Over here in that corner where the actor's face isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 120 frames per second. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, look at how 48 was recepted.
Yeah.
People hated it.
Yeah.
They're like, this looks horrible. And you can't tell me that that halftime show is not going to have some CGI elements to it.
I'm sure it'll have something, but you'll be able to pick it out as soon as you
exactly.
see it.
Exactly. And it's just
the sad part.
Then people are going to be like, this looks like dog shit.
Mm-hmm. If I ever get a chance to see it in that theater, I'll watch it.
Don't support the ticket sales.
It's not as bad as a Ghostbusters ticket sale, so.
Don't support the ticket sales. Don't go see it even to see a train wreck. Because, into my topic, there's something that recently happened in the movieverse.
Oh, really? Interesting.
The superhero movie verse.
Oh, no.
And as a pretentious hipster, it's me laughing in the face of superhero movies. Let's crunch some numbers here.
Sure.
As much as I don't give a shit about Rotten Tomatoes, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, was released last year or 2 years ago?
2014.
Yeah. So 2 years ago. Tomato meter, it is at 89% fresh rate. Audience score, 92%.
Okay.
Suicide Squad, tomato meter, 26%. Shit, the orientation on my phone changed. Audience score, 67%. That's a pretty big difference.
That's pretty high.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be that high.
Well, for the audience score, what recently had occurred was that Suicide just topped Captain America, The Winter Soldier's box office sales. Granted, there is a 2-year difference, and you know, but even still, I guess what I'm trying to get at the point of this is Suicide Squad is universally considered a shitty ass movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it still made more money than a superhero movie that's considered a great one. Look at your audience. Like, these are the people who are getting these movies made. And so these production companies, they're seeing this and being like, oh, Suicide Squad? Yeah, I mean, it didn't surpass Winter Soldier, but it surpassed Winter Soldier. Did I just say that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Civil War, they all blend together. It didn't surpass Civil War, but it surpassed Winter Soldier. And it says 718.9 million is how much it has raised globally.
Mm-hmm.
And Iron Man 2 was a shitty one. Mm-hmm. 624 million. Thor Dark World, yeah, kind of a shitty one. 644. The Winter Soldier, 714 million.
I would say there's a better analogy there. And thankfully, I was scared for a second, because at first I thought you meant the new Captain America. I'm like, there's no fuck.
First I thought it was the new Captain
America. I was going to shit my pants right down. Like,
I wasn't going to be surprised, to be honest.
The better analogy though, is Guardians. Another like team that really don't know, most people don't know who's in it. That's close, dangerously close right now to getting overtaken. That's 773. Came out the same year as Winter Soldier.
Wow.
And then Suicide's at 720. So it could happen. That's scary.
It's just, it's something I want to bring up. You just be like, this is the state of our movie, our film industry.
Yeah, it is.
With Hollywood. Where it's like, do you think they're going to look at those Rotten Tomato scores and that shit and be like, oh, I guess we did a really bad job, so we need to try a lot harder next year. No, they're going to be like,
no.
We made $718 million and still going.
We could bend Batman over and fuck him in the ass and it'll make some money.
What was the budget for it?
$175. Problem is, it's not going to make its money back. They spend a lot of money marketing. If it does, it'll get like maybe $50 million profit. But like that to them, that's all. That's sad. Yeah. This is even sadder for the industry. That is to them a failure.
Yeah, $50 million is a failure.
What in what world is $50 million a failure? You know, I mean, like that's just sad because they expect to make $100 million or $200 or $300.
Because he made a $175 million movie though.
Right. Plus the marketing was like.
Whoa. I just wish, and I know I'm pretty quiet on this because I've checked out of the whole superhero movie thing. I don't want to see anymore. I don't want to even talk about it. But if Hollywood would go back to like, let's take a small budget and let's have a great story and a great performances from our actors and put that out there, it'll be a hit.
Yeah.
Word of mouth on the quality of a film will do wonders more than advertising will.
Yes.
And what I've seen, of course, the last 10 years or so is just like the hype machine of go watch this. This is awesome. Look at this action. Look at this, blah, 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 all this shit. And the majority of the films I think come out as garbage. They're just garbage. But people still go and see them. So what they're doing is it's almost reverse psychology. They're hyping everyone up to see a movie before it even comes out.
Yeah.
Where I liked back in the day where a movie came out and then
people hyped it up.
People hyped it up after because mm-hmm. they're like, this is an amazing film. Everyone should go see it. And that's when they went and go to see it. So yeah, unless people discipline themselves to not go see these films, it's not going to change. But I don't see that happening, which is sad.
Well, see, that's the thing, doing the word of mouth thing.
It won't work now.
Because if it would have, or I mean, an example of it work being able to work would be Nice Guys.
Nice Guys and Kubo.
And Kubo. They didn't.
Or Mad Max last year.
Or Mad Max.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of places like going online and, you know, reading people talking about it. And they're like, this is a really great movie. This is a good movie. And it's like performing bad. Like, this sucks. You know, please go see it.
There's a problem, though. And it's another indication of how bad the system is. Those films in the past, like we talked about this before with release schedules, used to have a long lead time before anything else came out. And there was a long gap between that and another event movie, if you will. Now we're being force-fed all these movies like week after week after week. So they have to market crazy amount to get that 1 week bump so they can make most of their money, and then it drops precipitously because of the next film coming out or the next 2 weeks there's another film coming out. And that sucks. Like, we make less movies now as a country, yet somehow we make more shitty, and we have to, like, make it as if it's an event. I mean, I think I'd be interested.
That's the way you can get people in the theater, though.
Yeah.
Well, with video on demand.
I guess the fuck. It sucks so bad.
Well, I remember growing up, I'll use E.T. and, like, The Karate Kid, for example. Like, when E.T. and Back to the Future. Okay, those movies, when they came out, you know, of course, you know, there wasn't tons of advertising. We barely had, like, what, 10 channels on our TV at the time, you know what I mean?
I wasn't born yet.
But when it came out, it became so popular after that, it was, like, months-long event.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the theater for more than just a week or weekend. And there was no, like, eight other movies are coming down the pipe right after to take your attention away from it. You know what I mean? It was there was maybe two or three films a year that were just like, we have to go see this film because it's like, you know, the most successful film or whatever. And it just, yeah, like you said, it doesn't happen anymore. It's just garbage just churned down every week. And it's like, go see this, go see this, go see this. And then I think of movies like Room and stuff like that where, okay, yeah, it got a lot of attention and it got awards and stuff, but did Room make a lot of money in the theaters?
No.
And that's what's sad, and I wish we could go back to that. Like, it's a quality film, it should be returned monetarily, which doesn't happen.
No.
Which really doesn't give people who have great ideas or are creative much incentive to go make these films if that's the way it's going to be. You know?
No, I was talking with John about this last night, about how pretty much if you want to make your film, the majority of them are coming from foreign audiences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they use government funding and kind of like lotteries or kind of like sponsorships from companies that are like institute, like the British Film Institute.
Australia Film Board.
Film Board. To where they're like, here's money, go make your vision.
Yeah.
Whereas here, you can't fucking do that in America.
Oh, no, not anymore.
No.
Well, you see a lot of American filmmakers, like Nicholas Winding Refn, go to another country and get film funding, co-funding from this country.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or didn't Darjeeling Limited do the same thing? Wes Anderson got funding from India.
I could definitely see it.
Yeah, because they get incentives because you shoot in our country.
Yeah,
we'll give you some money. Like China does that to a larger extent for their shit.
That's why Refn did Only God Forgives in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
He went there and on vacation with his wife, and he's like, I love this place. I want to do a movie here. Or I think you said, I want to live here. And she's like, no, we're not. We're not staying here. And so then,
you can make a movie here. You're not living here.
Yep. And then he was for a year. Able to get the funding through it because they gave him a break with trivia. But, you know, people talk about the Hollywood collapse or the box office collapse. And I was watching some video. I can't remember who put it out. What they were basically saying was, that kind of reflect upon our economy is that we have the upper class superhero movies, then we have the poor class, which are films that you probably just see at a film festival, and that's as far as they're gonna go. We no longer have middle films. We don't have middle class films.
Nope.
Where it's like they said that to classify as like a middle class film is $100,000.
It's a middle.
That's a middle class film.
What? I wouldn't say that's like a middle. I thought middle was like 30 million tops. Because that is a pretty modest spending nowadays. Except for comedy or horror.
Modest spending compared to multi-million.
Right. Yeah, our numbers are inflated greatly.
That's what I'm saying. Is like, I feel like you could do a movie with $100,000. I could do a fucking movie with $100,000. And I have some money afterwards. Easy.
Well, you have to get a lot of people who are not going to work for scale. Union pay or actors who are going to maybe get residuals and not have to get paid up front.
Exactly.
That's mostly where the money goes. Like, when you see these $120 million films, because these two leads get $20 million apiece.
Yeah.
And then you're left to struggle the rest of it into a film.
Yeah, but you got leads. Like, what kind of leads are you talking about?
Well, for example, this
those film, that are part of SAG?
That, plus they just claim a higher pay raise. Like, the movie came out recently, a trailer came out, Passengers. Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt. I think Chris Pratt's getting $12 million, and Jennifer Lawrence is getting $20 million.
Yeah. Because
that's what they pull now.
Exactly.
So, like, that, you have to take that into factor. To have a marketable face, you gotta spend more for that person just for that.
But I'm talking about the middle class films that don't have those actors with that repertoire. Yes,
I'm sorry. No, or some that do. You're right. There are, like, indie films that can take a pay cut for. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I mean, fucking Colin Farrell did for The Lobster.
Yep.
Pretty sure he took a pay cut.
Oh, yeah. It's like a weird, optional, like, union minimum.
Christian Bale for Nine of Cups. I bet he's, like, just to be in a fucking Terrence Malick film.
Yeah.
I'm not even saying, like, having those actors that will take a cut just to do an indie film, but having indie film actors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't have that anymore. Where $100,000 seems like a reasonable budget.
Mm.
Because you factor in renting equipment, I mean, it's probably
probably the $100,000 right there.
Just rent equipment?
Depends on the length of the shoot. I mean, you can add up pretty quick. If you're going like low amount of equipment, maybe. But, I mean, different houses are different.
Yeah.
If you're in different towns. Like, renting equipment in Portland, Maine versus Hollywood is a fucking huge difference.
Well, yeah.
So you probably could get away with $100,000 for, like, Portland. Or maybe Boston. Maybe.
But we're no longer getting those films screened within theaters.
No.
With wide, you know, audiences.
Well, that's the thing. Even if you had a $100,000 budget and you managed to pull off a great film with it, you're not going to make even that $100,000 back.
Because it's not the next superhero fucking movie.
Yeah,
because
you'd have to sell it.
You'd have to, yeah.
Festivals.
Yeah.
You'd have to sell it out of the trunk of your car.
Yeah.
That's how.
Blu-ray's $10. Yeah. DVD's $5.
Yeah, I mean, that's the huge problem, though, is that we don't have that market anymore.
Yeah.
For those kind of films.
It's almost like there's no longer that. Because I remember back in, like, mid-90s when, like, Tarantino and Kevin Smith and that came out, and they put out their independent films that were well-received, and then they were given budgets to make more independent-style films.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore. So even if a director, a first-time director, makes an amazing independent film, he's going to be tapped to do a big blockbuster film. He's not going to be tapped to make another brilliant independent film.
Mark Webb.
Yeah.
Fucking Mark Webb.
It's
went
not
from 500 Days of Summer to Amazing Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And then Amazing Spider-Man 2.
I didn't like Monsters, but it was
Gareth Edwards.
Mm-hmm. To Godzilla.
Now Rogue One.
Josh Trank.
You know, Chronicle.
To Josh Tank.
But that's what happens now. They're not, which is really, it's some kind of weird psychosis with Hollywood, because it's like, they're recognizing them for their talent and what they did, and how creative they were. And they take them, and they're like, now we're going to put you in this thing where you're going to have no creative control, you're going to have no vision, you're going to have no voice, and just make this. It's like, why take them? Just, you got a whole stable of Hollywood hack directors, you can just grab one of them and make your...
Why not get J.J. Abrams to do it?
Yeah. So, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't Kevin Smith his clerk's budget to like $20,000?
Something like that. He sold his comic book collection, he maxed out all his credit cards.
Yeah.
And he ended up making it back.
Yeah.
Eventually, but...
Because I was looking at how much $20,000 is now in that time. $94,432,445 in today's dollars. Even that. Trying to make a movie with that nowadays? Good luck.
Good luck, mm-hmm. Yeah. And he was extremely lucky to have a group of people and supportive people and mm-hmm. friends with him to do that.
Yeah.
If you're by yourself with $32,000 and you've got to hire everyone, not going to happen.
You mean Dante and Randall aren't real?
I think their personalities might be real.
Probably.
Trivia, Randall is my favorite Kevin Smith character in his movie universe.
Good call.
Always will be.
Great character.
Everyone likes Jay and Silent Bob, but no.
Cockknocker is mine. Mark Hamill's portrayal of the fictional character Cockknocker.
Have you seen Tusk?
No, I won't.
Have you seen Yoga Housers?
No,
not yet. I want to see Yoga Housers because it sounds like a bad time.
It's horrible.
You've seen it?
No, I just heard people.
Just stop talking, Craig.
I love how these Bush beer cans are orange.
Yes,
I thought it was Halloween.
No,
it's for hunting.
It's for hunting.
Does that mean if I go
hunting? Like animals.
Does that mean if I go hunting and legally I'm supposed to have something orange on me and the game warden stops me, I can be like, I'm drunk on all these beers.
Just no, strap the beers like
I get orange on
like a bandolier and just be like. So kind of like, I guess back to the topic, Suicide Squad, a shit movie, made more money than a good one. I agree. Like, I'm fucking done with comic book movies. I'm just like, just fucking done. Not even going to see him being like, I can't. Yeah. I want to go watch it so I can make fun of it. Now I'm just sick and tired of it.
Yeah.
And just like seeing this play out and just being like, you're ruining what I love. Because now they know that we can just be lazy. We don't have to make anything great. People will just be like, they'll watch the commercial. There'll be some little song. They'll see some action and be like, I might as well go and see it.
Yeah. They'll put out a trailer and all the tourist comic fans who never actually read comics will hype it up.
Fucking comic hipster.
I am
say
a comic.
I'm pretentious.
I'm going to say it. I'm a comic hipster.
No, I'm kidding.
Well, it's like, okay, we'll use Doctor Strange as an example. Growing up, I loved the Doctor Strange character and actually liked Benedict Cumberbatch a lot as an actor, right? I do not want to see this film because I already know what it's going to be. It's going to be Doctor Strange.
Spoiler.
Here's some spoilers for Doctor Strange.
We read the script early.
We read the script.
We did.
Yep.
Sucks.
Doctor Strange has accident, realizes he can't be a doctor anymore.
He can't use his hands.
Finds a mystic guru, teaches him mystical powers. Ends up meeting up with some bad guy.
Who was part of that magical group.
Yeah.
But then went rogue.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. And then he will suffer a defeat to this bad guy. And then go have to hone his powers and make a comeback.
That's when he gets the cape.
And crazy visual special effects battle scene. Guy doesn't actually die.
It's just kind
of
like,
maybe he's sent to another dimension.
He like falls off the side of a kaleidoscope building and...
Yeah, something like that. Maybe he's dead, maybe he's not. And then Doctor Strange has a little scene at the end that promotes the next film.
Yep.
It
sounds like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be.
Spoiler.
Every single step, it's going to be the same thing. Did you watch, like, Ant-Man or any other movie? It's going to be the same fucking thing. Movie.
So yeah, well, they were originally not going to do an origin story. I was, like, excited because, oh, cool, how are they going to do that and introduce him without having to introduce him?
Mm-hmm.
They just fucking went back on it. Origin story. Fuck. Damn.
Because the test audience said...
Probably. I don't get it.
Or probably like, fuck, we can't
do
this.
Why does he have the power?
They already have to understand magic. We can't throw that at them.
So it's basically, if you've seen Iron Man, if you've seen Captain America, if you've seen Thor, if you've seen Ant-Man, if you've seen it, it's the same movie. It's going to be the same
Steel.
Movie.
Different characters. Is that one with Shaquille?
Yeah, it is.
Did you find your topic?
My topic is actually kind of linked to yours. And it's the whole idea of, because we were talking about it a little bit earlier, going to Bull Moose and seeing like all these old movies that were hard to find that are all of a sudden showing up on DVD shelves with like new releases.
Oh, yeah.
So I just want to talk briefly. I mean, I don't know a lot. I only know a few that do this. But place like Drafthouse Films mm-hmm. and like Magnet mm. and these places and whoever re-released all of Fulci's old Italian horror films, I think these things are a blessing.
Yes. Yes. I know what Arrow. Yeah, I've seen them several times. There's yeah. one with like the colored one. It's the one that I showed you today at Bone Moose.
Shout Factory is a company like that. They'll release old stuff.
Oh, the one that did the re-release of Night of the Living Dead, or Return of the Living Dead. Yeah.
They're also doing a two-pack of the Bill and Ted with like new documentaries and stuff.
Nice.
Oh, I'm excited for that.
I mean, Criterion Collection
yep.
is probably the most well-known one
yeah.
to do this. I think all those times that we couldn't find a movie or was hard to find or mm-hmm. you're going to pay out the ass for it on eBay.
Exactly.
I think the establishment of the... I think they're hitting what we were just talking about in the last discussion of where do we get our quality movies or our independent films or genres that we love and it's not the high-class Hollywood. This is it. I know everyone thought it was going to be like video on demand or all online streaming, but getting the actual DVDs...
Oh, yeah.
That is amazing.
Hmm. And that's the thing with like a lot of these companies that come out with these old films, they kind of have to go like a little step beyond to kind of like to entice and like cover the price of it. Criterion Collection. They are doing these like, you know, beautiful restorations, having to go and like digitally scan like each frame of this film. So that's going to cost a lot of money. And like most Criterion Collection Blu-rays run about $34, $40.
Damn.
And every Criterion Collection film includes a little booklet that has essays where you have, you know, these people that like went to film school or whatever who are film professors and they just, you know, have a little blurb where they give you some background information. They tell you where its place is. And it's really interesting and eye-opening of like reading that information. There's one recently that I got, A Touch of Zen. Apparently like the premier Wuxia film, what, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
Oh, yeah.
You know how they're all floating around and doing all that stuff? That was actually a Chinese martial arts style film called Wuxia. And so this was like the top one. And it has an essay on it, but you fold it out and it's like this fucking poster.
Nice.
And it just looks beautiful. Yeah. It was the first one of Criterion Collection I've seen. But I love that they're adding that where it's not just like, oh, here's just a release of this old film.
Yeah.
Like they're adding more content to it.
Yeah. Well, it's great because if you're like a collector, because for me, I like to have physical copies of things. I don't...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I've never 100% gone into everything's going to be streamed or downloaded. Like digital music, I don't even like. I'd rather have the CD, mm-hmm. and I'd rather have the booklet, and I'd rather have the artwork. And for film especially, you know, I mean, I know I can go on, like, Amazon Prime with my subscription and just buy all these films.
Yeah.
But dude, I want a collection. I want them on my shelf. And
exactly.
These places are... They're totally filling that gap for collectors. I did have a problem, though, with Drafthouse because I was trying to get a copy, the Blu-ray of The Visitor, because it came with, like, the 40-inch poster and everything. It's still, I guess they're still not, like, super up to par on their website because it would not accept any of my information to buy the actual... And I was kind of bummed, but then I went to Bull Moose and they had a bunch of Drafthouse film DVDs there. Mm-hmm. Although without the posters.
Yeah.
But I want that poster.
Like, I want that Field in England poster.
Yes.
Yeah, but I already have it on Blu-ray.
So there's a B-movie called Dangerous Men, which has been circulating on the internet for a while, and I think Red Letter Media might have watched it.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those, it's so bad, it's good. And it's like, how did this movie get made?
Yes,
how did they get a budget?
Yeah.
How did this continue? Blah, 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 all that. And they have Blu-ray copies from Drafthouse at Bull Moose now. And I'm like...
No shit.
So that's going to be a pickup at some point.
You know, it's so weird. Speaking of Red Letter Media and their best of the worst that they do,
yeah,
I will see a lot of those Blu-ray copies.
Oh yeah,
Samurai Cop.
Yeah, no, it's everywhere.
Fucking like that pops up. Yeah. Rotor.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like several other. I'd be like, I remember them having like some shitty VHS copy that they watched in that show, and it's like now it's here on Blu-ray.
Miami Connection is another one. That's now
that's everywhere. From Draft House.
Yeah, it's from Draft House.
I like these companies because not only, like you said earlier, they put a lot of love into these releases. They don't just shit them out.
Yeah.
And to your point earlier, to both your points, there's a need for high quality films or films of a certain era that had this endearing charm to them. Not necessarily good, but maybe they grew up with them. Maybe they respected that filmmaker, whatever have you. And that's why you see this like dearth of releases. These people are bringing out these old films because there's something, you know, there's a historian aspect to it. You know, there's just a nostalgic look to it. And I love that kind of stuff. I'm glad they're doing it. I mean,
well, it's almost like it's like archiving them for history, like a cultural archive of these things. I'd rather have them lost to time and never, because I always think back at when Doctor Who was revamped in 2005, and it got super popular again, right?
Oh yeah,
all the old Doctor Who film reels were all dispersed to the wind. I mean, they were like sold off at auctions, they were put in people's collections, they were left in like basements and stuff like that. And like the search that like BBC went on to try to get all of that film back
so they can re-release
all the old Doctor Who episodes. But it's amazing that it got to that point where they just screw it, no one's ever gonna watch this again, so fuck it, let's get rid of them, you know what I mean? And they still haven't got it all back. So I think nowadays it's more like, we can't do that, you can't do that anymore, you can't just, oh, people didn't like this film, so fuck it, trash it and never have it restored again or never. I'm like, no,
even if it's a shit movie.
Yeah,
it's so sad because like film has a better chance than like video game archival. A lot of our games we grew up, I mean, even the ROMs don't do it justice, but you can't play an NES game on your fucking PS4 or your Wii U. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't work that way. And at least with film, like, eventually it will be all digital, right? Hopefully not. At the very least, they'll use that same file from the 4K restoration Blu-ray and use that. So because they took time and transferred it to either DVD or Blu-ray, it's gonna like live on in some way. Whereas these games like are gone forever.
The hang-up for me with digital is that for you to be able to watch it, you either have it on your hard drive or you stream it.
Mm-hmm.
Streaming, that's going to require an internet connection. And sometimes, with our fucking internet companies, it's very spotty.
I made the mistake. I mentioned last episode, when we were talking about anime, of getting Space Dandy. Now, I could have got the Blu-ray copy for like $34.99 on Amazon.
Yeah.
They also had the same season one for like $20 to buy it HD digital. So I said, I'll save $15 and I'll get the streaming version, right?
Yeah.
It will not stream in full HD because the internet is not fast enough. And not only that, sometimes it stopped because the internet wasn't fast. I'm like, I should have just paid the extra $15 and had the Blu-ray and been able to just 100% of the time watch in HD.
Yeah, because even if you're like home visiting your family and you want to watch it, you can bring your PS4 and watch it any fucking time you want.
Exactly,
without internet, but now you have to, you're beholden to the...
And not only that, you have something of value.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That you can either want to resell at some point or hold on to, you know, rather than just...
I never thought of it that way, like the reselling thing. So, like, I think about how recently I went through another purge through my Blu-ray collection. I was just like, Fight Club. Like, I don't care about that movie anymore. So I got rid of that.
Yeah.
And then I was able to get, you know, some other...
Well, that's why I done it, like, once on my PS4. Download, like, a $60 new game to the hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like doing that because when I'm tired of a game, I'll go to Bull Moose or somewhere and trade in and get at least $15, $20 credit towards something else. You can't do that with any digital version.
Just like a little anecdote about these film companies going, or not film companies, but going back and releasing all these older films. I think it's a movie I talked about before here, Belladonna of Sadness. Okay, I was reading through this little booklet that came with it because I bought it on Blu-ray.
After seeing the theater,
because it's that fucking great of a movie. Anyways, I was reading through the notes, and it was getting towards the end. And it was talking about how the re-release of this, like, it was kind of like a lost film. And it was, like, through several companies. And I think it's Spectravision. It is one of them. But it is co-owned by Frodo. Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood, okay.
By Elijah Wood.
Yeah. He's big into the film world, though. Like, he loves practical effects. And he was in that documentary about practical effects with Nicotero. And
I've gotten so much more respect for Elijah Wood.
Yeah.
Now that I've seen his personal tastes and interests in film.
Yeah.
And he did Maniac, like a remake of Maniac. and I'm just
movie.
Yes.
Awesome movie.
And I was just like, this movie. Dude seems like someone I'd hang out with because he's just like, let's fucking look at practical effects and horror and all this shit. And I never expected that from him.
See, that was the thing with like this Bell Dawn of Sadness, where it's like a Japanese erotic animated film. Not animated, but animated film based off of a French novel. And it's just like, wait, Elijah Wood?
Elijah Wood.
Here he is. He's talking about, I just love the feministic side of this film. And the soundtrack is absolutely amazing because he's like huge into music. And I'm just like...
And I love how... he's being vocal about it, and he's being upfront about it, he's showing it, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, there's a lot of actors that probably are into that kind of thing, or, and they're just, but they're not, you don't see it.
No, it's because the majority of the time you see them just, like, talking about their new movie.
The only other actor that I know that you see more of his personality and stuff is, like, Keanu Reeves, like, his lifestyle and how he's very humble and he's...
His side-by-side, did you watch that?
No.
It was about film versus digital, and it was like a documentary that he led.
This just popped in my head. It was a show, and you all know the show. The first show to relight old films and make them enjoyable again was Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the movies that they, like Mano's Hand of Fate, okay?
Yeah.
You now see that on Blu-ray and on DVD everywhere. Not even the Mystery Science Theater version, the actual film, because people want that film now just because.
So then they can do the Mystery Science Theater and riff on it.
But there's so many movies from Mystery Science Theater 3000 that I was like, I would have never seen this, would have never known this existed.
Yeah.
It probably would have been lost time, and they brought it back, and they made fun of it, but it was fun.
In a small way, that's what Red Letter Media does now.
Yeah.
They pass that torch along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Mystery Science Theater guys, don't they do something else now? They do interruptions, right? Or like riff tracks.
Riff tracks.
Yeah.
Which is pretty interesting because they do like modern movies now. They'll do like a Hollywood blockbuster and just do the same thing they did with Mystery Science Theater.
There are a lot of those things around, like especially Draft House theaters. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They'll have in Texas, they have one. It's called Master Pancake. Doug Benson does Benson Interruptions of movies. There are other versions of that, like all across the country. I would love to be a part of that, and or just sit there and watch the film with them.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great.
That's why I'm always excited when I see like a local theater. Like, we're bringing back this old movie and we're putting it in. We went to see Snatch at Three Tides in Belfast in their beer garden. They have a big projection screen up there. And you can hardly see the screen. The audio is not super good. But we're sitting there eating hot dogs, drinking beer, watching Snatch.
It was fucking great.
It was awesome.
It was amazing.
And everyone there loved it. But I love that.
Just a slight aside, because Draft House came up and I just remembered something. So they're doing a screening of the 36 Chambers.
Okay.
An old kung fu movie with live music performed by RZA.
Nice.
Where? And I was just like, which one? Oh, probably like the original Texas one down in Austin, Texas. And I'm just like,
that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I know how cool that would be. Mm-hmm. Just being like, hey, this is the film that influenced Wu-Tang Clan 36 Chambers. Right there. And I'm going to play music while watching it. Just like,
that'd be awesome.
What if they did a recording of it and then like re-released that?
That would be amazing.
I need to get in contact with Draft House and be like,
and RZA, what's up, RZA?
Be like, I can make you guys gold. You know how many people, like even white people, probably it's going to be the majority of just white hipsters being like, I'm down with Wu-Tang Clan. Just like me, Augustine Anderson. Be like, and I want to watch Kung Fu movie.
I know two people who are white that love hip hop and are well versed in it, John and Brian. Not you.
You don't fucking know me.
I'm just saying. Like, it's not that big of a stretch. I mean, it's Austin, Texas. That's probably going to be mostly white people. I mean, that's pretentious capital of Texas right there.
Yeah.
But not a bad way, I guess.
Even where Dallas makes fun of them. It's like, that's not part of Texas.
Yeah, it's an oasis of normal people, or at least semi-normal people, in a fucking weird-ass red conservative state. Sorry, Texan fans. All zero of you.
All zero.
Speaking of hip-hop, not related to film.
Cool. Second aside.
I downloaded the Danger Doom album. Oh. And all the guest characters.
And MF Doom.
Yeah. Are Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Yeah.
Voice actors.
Shit.
So Dana Snyder.
Hilarious. And they actually use their characters in the tracks and stuff. That's cool. So it's like Shake Sock and then Meat Wad and everything. And then this kick ass like hip hop beats and rap over it. It's so cool.
But there's some of that shit in Mad Villainy.
Yeah, there's some of it. But this is like the whole album. Which is so fucking cool. Anyway, side. That was a side note.
Aside.
I know it's about film, but if anyone loves hip hop and Aqua Teen Hunger Force, look up Danger Doom.
Aqua Teen had a movie. That's stretching up.
There we go. Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, I'm Jamie.
John.
And I am August.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.